Welcome to the Pilates Progressions Program. I'm Katrina Fo, your host for tonight, and I'm so excited to get a chance to help you with your Pilates practice and your teaching and help understand the body in new ways. So go ahead and call in, and you can ask me questions live. The number is always 347-838-9945. Again, that's 347-838-9945. Or, as most of you tend to prefer, that you can email me your questions, and I would be happy to get to them as time allows. Of course, first preference always goes to live callers. So I just wanted to first off say that I have heard from several of you that you had a great time at the Pilates on Tour in Phoenix, and I'm glad it went so well. I would love to hear any feedback from any of you that went. That would be a lot of fun. So call in 347-838-9945 if you have anything to share, if you had a good time, or if you just want to talk about what you learned. I know a lot of people tend to, when you're done with your training, you kind of sit in your comfort zone. And I love for people to get to go to that first conference, because once you go, you understand how much you can learn and how much it broadens your horizons. It takes you to a deeper place. You just understand the position you are in the Pilates world at large, as well as the position you're in within, you know, the context of the greater scheme of the history of Pilates, and as well as learning a whole bunch of new information about the body and information about the equipment and how to teach and all sorts of good stuff. So while I feel like we have done a really great job at the P3 program of putting together lots of materials for you to understand and, you know, learn more. There's always more. There's always more, which is the fun thing, which is why you'll never get bored. All right, so we have a caller, and I'm going to go ahead and put you on. Let's see. Hello, you are live.
Hello, Katrina, it's LaVon.
Hey, LaVon, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Did you get to go to the Pilates on Tour in Phoenix?
I did. It was in Tempe at the Marriott at the Butte, and it was very nice.
Oh, good. Well, I would love to hear what you thought of it. Did you enjoy it?
I did. It was it was overwhelming in the fact of all the information, and I just heard you say real quick, you'll never get bored at Pilates. It's like, good grief. It's you could just go. You could go forever. And you know, I would like to do that, but it is, it was a lot of information in a short time, so I just left there with maybe absorbing a small portion of it and going, I just need to go home and think about that.
Yeah.
So,
that's very common. That
was a lot of it.
That experience. Mm-hmm. The experience of having so much information, having to digest it and, like, go through your notes and go get on the equipment and try it with your clients, that's completely normal.
It was. And, you know, we had lectures and then, you know, you moved and did on the equipment. But that was so quick. So that it's just, you know, nothing really sunk in really deep. And so in that realm, it was frustrating. And, again, that could just be me in the way I was comprehending things. But it was awesome. You had mentioned the food. The food was really good. I'm just going to say that. I got my free mat, and that was fun. So, and I met some nice people, and it was interesting. A lot of people from California, but I ended up not meeting anybody from Phoenix, which is interesting. Everybody, they were from Florida and Kansas and Oklahoma. You know, they flew from all over to be there. So that was pretty interesting.
The Phoenix Summit tends to have the most people from out of state, out of the country and stuff. Because it's a rehab summit, they have a lot of physical therapists or people that are interested in bringing Pilates to their therapy come in. So there are a lot of people, and that's the only one that's a rehab summit, so it does get a lot of people. And in terms of the people not from Phoenix not attending, I am not sure what that's about, so I'm just going to I know I've seen that trend myself in terms of when taught at other POTs, it's almost all local people, like local within several hours. And, you don't get that in Phoenix. I'm not sure if we're just kind of a little apathetic or what that's about. So a little embarrassed that we don't get to see more Phoenix. But
Well, I'm sure they were there. It's not like I met a million people, you know, but the people I ended up being in class with that connected with, you know, and ended up having lunch or whatever with, again, you know, they were all from out of state. So I thought that was kind of neat. You know, I felt privileged to be there, you know, that people spent way more money to get there than I did. And so, again, not
that might be part of it. That might be part of it, that people in Phoenix and the surrounding area, you know, take it for granted because it is there every year. It's one of the only places that they have every year. And so maybe we've all been there and don't see, you know, oh, well, it'll be there next year, you know, kind of attitude. I don't know. But, I know. I mean, I'm fairly well connected with the Phoenix people. I mean, I know of or know most of the instructors, at least the ones that have been around there a while. And, yeah, I don't usually see too many familiar faces when I go there, to that one in particular, from people, local people. So you're not crazy.
Interesting.
But it is fun. Yeah, odd. So what session did you enjoy the most? Who did you take from?
Well, I had classes. It's interesting. I had four classes, and I ended up only seeing two instructors because they were obviously similar. So I saw Karen Klippinger, and I saw Beth Kaplenick.
Uh-huh. And what do you think of Karen?
And I liked her very much. Very informative. She was a little more laid back. I definitely liked her. Her classes were good. And Beth, I really liked. She was really fun. She had a really kind of a fun, spunky attitude. So have you ever met her?
I have not met her. So that's awesome. Karen
I really
is probably
liked
one
her.
Of my... Karen's probably one of my absolute favorite presenters to take from. I think she's got, like, this huge wealth of knowledge. She's actually the author of the Dance Anatomy and Kinesiology book, which I think is probably one of my favorite books. I pour through it on a regular basis. And I find she has lots of really creative little tweaks to things and interesting ways of looking at it. But she is very laid-back, chill kind of personality, not as spunky as the other lady you're describing.
Yeah,
so
but it was good. You know, I took... Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I liked her very much. She was very informative. So the classes I took from her were kyphosis and osteoporosis, and then low back pain and Pilates extension-based program. So I'm not going to go into detail because I can't, because I still have to go over my notes. But, you know, one of the things I think that she really pointed out is that... that we need to have more extension in our programs. You know, she's like, I love Pilates, but if you look how biased we are to flexion as opposed to extension. And she was asking, you know, is your session aggressive enough to see changes in your clients? And she just encouraged us to bias our program more towards extension with anyone over 35. She's very strong. And definitely
a
proponent. No, but you could see her arm muscles, but you know, I think she said she was 63. I don't remember, but she was really, one of the things again, I took from it, it was, you know, she's definitely about increasing strength, but also endurance. And so it made me think of my clients, because nobody's really good at extension exercises. It's hard to keep your core in, and they're hard. That's why nobody wants to do them. But having them hold the position for, you know, a few seconds, and I just started thinking, my clients, they go up in extension, they want to come down. And it's like, well, I'll do five of these, but I'm going to do them real quick because nobody wants to stay there. So she was just encouraging the endurance part of the back extension. So I felt.
So huge. That is so enormous. And I would totally agree with that, because most people, if you look, and I've talked about this, like when we talk about observation video or observation hours and doing that, you watch and see, like, if people get flexion, extension, rotation, and side bending in a lesson. And a lot of times people miss any extension. And, you know, you think about it.
Or there's out of 20 exercises, there's two extension exercises. Right.
I know,
so
and a lot of times in the lesson plans that I have, you've got at least two things. And I have seen so many people, they'll take both of them out. I'm like, oh, you can't do that. Like, add three more
oh, wow.
in. Don't take two out. And it's, I mean, the mm-hmm. side-vein rotation is important, too. But, you know, you talk about how much kyphosis everybody has and that forward slumping. And it's just, I mean, yeah, they need, like, opposite, like, 18 exercises that are extension and two flexion or something like that.
Exactly. And that would probably, she would probably be nodding her head at that for sure. So,
right.
you know, and she said, and I don't have any study here, like documentation, but she said study shows that one day a week of rigorous back extension exercise can be impactful.
Oh, but, I would agree.
So,
yeah,
and, you know, and then one of the things that I'm sure it was pointed out to us at some point is having somebody stand against the wall and see how far C7, your cervical spine, is mm-hmm. from the wall, and to measure somebody's progress with that.
Yep.
So,
yeah,
and again, I probably learned that in
the
thing.
You can do that really great with the pedipole too, even if you want to do it like
oh,
integrate
okay.
into their thing
okay.
too. Yeah. But the
right.
wall, everybody's got a wall.
Everybody's got a wall.
That, yeah, I'd hope so. Although I did see one Pilates studio in Hawaii that had no walls. It was really cool. But I think what you said about the endurance is really huge. And I think that we just want to encourage everybody on that because that's exactly what everybody does. They jump up in and out of it, and it's just a matter of did I do it? Did I check it off my list? Versus can
yep.
I hold it? And I just think of swimming. I mean, how many people just, like, peter out, you know, like halfway through and they get smaller and smaller and smaller and they just whine about it. And it's like, yeah, for me, it's endurance. That's what it is. You know, it should be 10
it,
sets
it really
of 10
is.
Breaths, just like the 100, and nobody does that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like 20 seconds.
I love
people
to
are,
do,
like, whining.
I love to do the 100 breaths for swimming. That, I
exactly.
find, is so effective. But
mm-hmm.
so anyway, I don't want to take up your hour. Real quick, the other
no,
two classes
this is
I took
great
from this,
to hear
this,
what you learned.
This Beth Kaplanik, she's an RN as well, and I took hip and knee replacements and Pilates, restoring function, strength, range of motion, all that, and then from her also I took hip syndrome. So they were similar. Both the two classes I took from each of the people were similar, and you know why that was so awesome is because there was some repetition in both class, and that's how I learned. So they're like, if anybody was in my class earlier, I'm sorry, you're going to hear some of the same thing. And I'm like, thank goodness. I was like, oh my gosh,
that's
I'm so
funny.
Glad. Well, anyway, so the hip replacement thing, this lady, she has a book out, which I'm probably going to buy at some point, but I'm not ready to absorb it. But it's Pilates for Hip and Knee Syndromes and Arthroplasties. And
oh.
she's had physicians totally endorse her book. It's a pretty big book. But she gives you everything you would need to do a session for somebody from, like, to say 6 weeks to 3 months, and then 6 months. Or 3 months to 6 months, and so forth. You know, these are your ranges of motion. This, you know, she gives degrees and whatever, obviously, you know, and she gives pictures and stuff, so it's not like, I know we're not measuring stuff, but basically,
right.
you know, when they leave physical therapy. And so that was in, one of the things I wanted to point out, and I can't remember exactly how she said it, but there were statistics on the PowerPoint up there, of the amount of people that are going to have joint replacements by a certain time. And she just says, we as Pilates instructors are in such an awesome position because they're going to be searching for rehab. And one of the things that I experience personally is you go through your little physical therapy and then they're like, well, just walk. That's just good. Well, walking wasn't just, oh, I need it. That's not going to return, you know, a younger person back to that physical fitness level that they need. And so she said, you know, she's had doctors just so encourage people to do Pilates because it's whole body. But, again, working
right.
safely. So her book lays it out. You know, you can have a whole plan for somebody that comes to you that is, you know, in that first year for rehab. So anyway, and then the hip syndromes was interesting too. Again, I'm seriously a little overwhelming. She just gives different conditions, you know, that people have, and then how you'd want to treat that in the protocol and whatever. So
yeah.
It was interesting. I took Matt. Do you know Matt McCulloch from New York?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I, so
not,
I took
not
one
well.
Of his Matt. Okay, well, he's very nice. I took one of his mat classes before breakfast on Saturday morning, and it was a mat class for men. And, you know, while I was in there, I don't really know why it was necessarily for men, because I thought it was great. And so I went up to him later. I'm like, I said, I couldn't take notes. Obviously, I was busy. And so he's going to email me his whole mat routine that he had there, which I'm super excited to implement. He did a lot with the Magic Circle. And then I took a reformer class at lunch with somebody, their last name Valentine. Do you know her?
Oh, yes, I know Valentine very, very well. She's a hoot, isn't she?
Oh, my gosh. I was so intimidated in that reformer class. There was, I don't know how many of us there were in there. It was, you know, reformers lined up against the wall, and I've never been in a group reformer class like that ever. I mean, I've been in there with, like, three people before, you know. So, you know, she was like this drill sergeant. It was hilarious. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, I have to keep up. I mean, she wanted everybody doing the same thing at the same time, which I understand. You can have 15 people doing something different. But, oh, my gosh, at one point I know she was looking at me going, don't swing your arm. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, that's probably me. So it was funny. It was
so funny.
I ended up eating breakfast with her. She's very nice, but it was intimidating. It was an intimidating environment for me because I'm kind of quiet.
Well, you have to know about Valentine that she comes off very drill sergeant-like, and her big thing, ironic because of what you said about Matt, that you took his Matt class for men, is her thing is that she teaches a lot of classes for men, and that they actually really like that. And she makes them wear a uniform, and, like, you know, I mean, they, like, practically salute her, and they all, like, I saw them all come to one of the conferences once to perform for us. And, you know, she calls out these things like it's a boot camp or something, and they are just, like, into it. It's hilarious. But that's her personality.
It was.
She's just – and if you mess up, she's not going to do anything. She might tease you or something. For example, this is a true story. She told me that she was trying to get her clients – these men, she has other women clients too, but to get that not tucking your tail under when you're doing your footwork and your feet and strap stuff, you know how people kind of tuck under and they get their waistband down?
Mm-hmm.
And she calls it, like, what did she call it? It was so funny. She doesn't want you to have a diaper on, like lift your butt up like you're going to put a diaper on. And so if her men did that, she would put, she had a disposable diaper that she had taped onto her wall, and she'd write their name on the diaper.
Oh, my gosh, that's hilarious.
But can't you totally see her doing that?
Yes.
I could never do that.
Now that you say that, never. I know. It was fun, though. I mean, it was a great workout. It was fun, but you had to really keep up and, you know, you know about my condition that I've had, so I've been moving into everything super cautiously, and so I was trying to be cautious but keep up. So
yeah,
it was fun. But and then Saturday night they what's the president of Balanced Body? What's his name?
Ken
Endelman or
Ken Endelman.
What is it?
Ken Endelman.
He did a little thing about the history of Joseph Pilates, and so he's been really interested in digging up ancestry and archives and different things. So
isn't he fantastic?
He was really nice, and he's definitely very interested in that. And it was interesting, Joseph Pilates, this is something I hadn't heard, wrote President Kennedy a letter asking him to implement his method into the schools, and nothing ever came of it, unfortunately, but he had a copy of the letter that he had sent to him. So that's one of the things that Joseph Pilates, I didn't know, huh?
Yeah, Ken is amazing. He has researched so much, and he does that history talk at every POT, and I think a lot of people write it off as like, I did that last year or something, but he is continually researching and changing it because, I mean, He gets very in-depth studying the patents that were filed. He has copies
mm-hmm.
of all the patents that Joe filed. He's actually got multiple pieces of Joe's actual authentic, like Joe made this piece of equipment. He's got this really great reformer that has aqua leather, and it has hinges on the side with this, it's like a case that goes over the reformer and makes it into a day bed. And it's covered with the same
leather. He had a picture of that.
Leather. I know. I've worked out on that. How fun is that?
Did you? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Let's just say when your clients That's complain funny. That there's not enough padding, you tell them about this. Because it is leather on wood, and there is no padding.
That is crazy. Well, he did have a slide of that, and so it was interesting. So he said, yeah, that's at Balanced Body. Somebody sold it to him and didn't want it, and it's like, wow, that's kind of a neat piece of history.
It's really cool, yeah. And for those of you that go to the Sacramento POT this year, they're having, like, a big thing with the factory. You'll probably get to see it because it's at the factory in Sacramento. But
trying to promote that.
Huh?
Yeah, I know. And so they were really trying to promote the Sacramento thing. They said they're going to have a circus and everything, and they're making a really big deal out of it. But anyway.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was my experience. And thank you for listening. And
Oh, you're welcome. I'm so glad you called in, LaVon. How's everything else been going? Any other comments or questions while you're here?
No, you know, I had sent you that email that I have that client about that
yes,
her PT told her she had bowed tibias. Okay, so if you want to just, at your leisure, talk about that, I'll just listen.
I can read it right now if you'd like.
Okay, whatever, that's fine.
Yeah, okay, so here's what she wrote. You wrote, let's see. Okay, that you have a client that is bow-legged. She has been going to PT for some SI issues, and the PT told the client to tell you that she has bowed tibias and to just look at her alignment from hips to knees. She inverts and supinates, arched lifted toes in. If I have her correct in that alignment, her knees are not in alignment. I can't ignore her feet. Would you please advise? Well, I think this is very indicative of how PTs look at things versus how we look at things, meaning that PTs are trained both in their schools and by the way the insurance company allows them to work, that they are only supposed to look at the area that is in pain. So you have to keep that in the back of your mind, and I can't do that either. So I would not ignore her feet. Now, you have to also remember that the client has been conditioned from birth to think that a PT is like a doctor, and they're always right. And so I wouldn't argue this with a client. I would just also maybe do some, depending on the client, maybe some education, but, you know, just do work on her feet. But, you know, I wouldn't argue that point because you may or may not be able to win that battle in terms of changing their mind that the PT said this. And so it's not that you have to go against the PT. I would just definitely still look at it because I don't think it's possible to have the knees and hips independent of the feet. They're sitting on top of it. They're always going to be affected by it. So, yes, you want to look at their feet. I think probably the easiest thing if she's really focused on what the PT says is to just talk about her feet separately and just say, okay, think about this as a separate issue. I want to make sure your feet don't end up having problems because I see this. But to me, if she's inverting and supinating her feet, that is so connected to a bowed tibia. And I personally have seen so many structural changes and believe that the body is very dynamic that it's not like if you have bowed tibias, they're cement and they wouldn't change. You know, how you use the muscles create the shape of the bones. And so, heck yeah, work on those feet and look at the whole alignment. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. It does.
One thing I would say, though, is that Rome's not going to be built in a day. So, yes, her toes and knees may not be in alignment. And you're going to have to let that go a little bit for a while as she gets the right muscles connecting and is working on this. So don't beat her up and don't beat yourself up if she doesn't get it right then. And that goes with any malalignment because the body doesn't change super quick, which is a good thing because we wouldn't want it to go – bad quick either, but just are you feeling comfortable with what to do with her and such?
Well, I, you know, sometimes, you know, during footwork, I will just say, you know, just try to bring, you know, that foot down a little bit more. I'll just make little suggestions like that because she'll be right on that outer edge of her foot. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, I can't look at that. And so, again, like you say, I've never tried to contradict what the PTs told her in any way. I just kind of, in my own mind, I'm going, how do I kind of subtly address that a little bit? And so, you know, she can put her foot down. I mean, if she puts it all the way down, like I said, then, you know, nothing else is really right. So I guess I've just been trying to find that happy medium to some degree.
Yeah. You're not going to win the battle probably if you take on the arguing with what the PT said. So it's not worth engaging in that. Whether or not you think the PT is right, we can have our own opinion and not have to discuss it with them. However, some ideas. Do you have a jump board?
Yes.
Okay. Put that in and try doing her footwork with that. And that's going to immediately give her more tactile feedback as to what part of her foot's on there. And just, you know, plant some ideas. Okay, you know, with our foot, we should feel, you know, all the balls of our feet and our heel nice and even distributing the weight. You know, do you feel that? And just, you know, kind of bring that to her attention and, you know, maybe plant some ideas of, you know, if that's not a natural thing, when you work on that, it's going to start engaging muscles to bring your body back into alignment. So you're not really arguing with the PT, but you're just educating her in kind of a backdoor kind of way. And that, you know, on other things where she's weight-bearing on her feet, again, you can do some really great exercises because when the foot is in a closed chain, so it's kind of in a against something, so maybe footwork with the jump board, elephant, anything standing or those kinds of exercises, you have the foot where it's not really going to move. And so then from there, you've got the foot fixed. You can shift the weight on the foot to the balls or the heels or inside or outside and such. But then you can work on, okay, the foot's being held still. Let's get the knee pointing the right direction. And then versus if you're in an open chain, you know, maybe feet and straps or, you know, your feet are just in the air for the hundreds, if you start to get the knee pointing the right direction, you know, so the hips moving and everything, the foot will just go do its own thing. And it's harder for you to try to get the right muscles turned on there because you've got, you know, spaghetti body going on. And as soon as you fix one thing, the other thing's off to lunch. And it's hard to get that. So you could use those techniques to try to work on getting the right muscles firing in her legs. And again, whether you know the name of the muscle or not, it's kind of irrelevant. It's just working on that. You know what right alignment is. The feet, the knees, and the hips, and you can cure towards that.
Okay. That's a great idea with the jump board.
Yeah, the jump board's really nice with the footwork. I'm actually going to talk about that more in another question we have about jumping, but, yeah, it's a good one. So if you don't have a jump board, don't forget, or if you have a jump board, rather, don't forget that you can use it for footwork. It's also really good if people have injuries that they're rehabbing from, or if they have any kind of neuropathy or, you know, funky feet issues, to be general and vague. But, yeah, when they have bad alignment, the more of the feedback, the tactile sensations they can have on their foot, the better. And I mentioned elephant specifically because I really like elephant versus any other standing upright exercise because their head should be down. I say should because usually it's trying to come up. And they can look at their feet. So not only can they feel it, but they can also see it. And so you can say, do you see how, you know, the ball of this foot is totally up? And even if they're really out to lunch with what their body's doing and feeling it, their eyes can see it. And a lot of people are much more visual than tactile.
That's a great idea. I love that, too.
Have you guys noticed that the elephant, I think, is my favorite exercise? I keep coming back to that.
What is the elephant? It's everybody's favorite exercise. Who doesn't love that? Let me, if you don't mind, I have another quick question. You just brought it to my mind. One of the things that's so funny, I went there with the purpose of buying a toe corrector. And I know that sounds hilarious. People are buying all these large pieces of equipment, and I just wanted that toe corrector. But because I have clients, I just have clients with a lot of feet problems. And so I was going to Google to get maybe some more information, but I have a client that he's saying he has neuromas, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think that he has, but at one point he can't really feel his feet too much. It's better since we've been working footwork and the ball and stuff. He can actually curl his toes under now, which is kind of exciting. But is there anything I need to be concerned about with that, using that toe corrector? Because they didn't really – I've watched a couple YouTube videos, and I just haven't – nobody's addressing that.
Yeah, the toe corrector is one of the more obscure pieces of equipment. I love it. I bought mine, I don't know, like 10 years ago, because I think they're so fabulous. It was before Balanced Body
mm-hmm.
came, so mine's not a Balanced Body one. I actually talked about them and went over. Somebody else had some questions about it. They just got one as well. I don't know if it was last week or the week before. I don't know.
Oh, okay. I'll try to go back.
Yeah, and there's also a nice little standing series that Nancy Myers is teaching. She's great with the feet on Balanced Body site on the toe correctors. But
traditional
series.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, that's a good one. The traditional series of the toe corrector stuff, I talked through it, which again, you'll probably find some YouTube videos or something. But I talked through it on that Blog Talk Radio episode a week or two ago. But it's a great piece, and I don't think you're alone in having a lot of clients with weird feet. I think that's one of the areas that, you know, we as Americans, we're taught to, you know, put your foot in this super, quote, supportive shoe, which is aka a cement block holding your foot still, and all the foot muscles just atrophy, and they go funky, and then you take it out, and they're like, blah, and they can't do anything, and they go into these weird positions, and there's so much wrong. They either get just hard as rocks or weak as limp noodles, and they're just awful. So, and then you get more supportive shoes, right? I mean, just look at those supportive shoe stores. I mean, that is bazillion-dollar industry. I mean, you look at all the different shoe and foot things there are, corrective arches and all sorts of stuff. It's huge. And if people could just buy a toe corrector and a foot corrector, it'd be awesome. And
so
for those
do you
of you
feel
that are,
that
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. Well,
no,
I just didn't
okay.
know, do you feel, are there any precautions that I need to be really careful of with that toe corrector with anybody? I mean, I've just got different, every people just have different issues. So
good
I just
question.
Don't want to hurt anybody. Okay.
I don't think there's a whole lot of precautions. The toe corrector, the really nice thing, I'll just give you a little side thing. You can actually do a lot of those exercises the same with a really thick rubber band like that comes on your broccoli. However,
and
I've
been doing that, yeah.
Yeah, that the negative about that is that if your client doesn't put it on just right or if they're not real coordinated, they can go flying and really hurt someone, like poke their eye out. Probably yours, because they'd go flying off their toe. The toe correctors can't do that. They don't go flying, which is a good safety thing. So in that regard, there's nothing safety-wise. I don't think there's a whole lot you could really screw up. Unless you're doing some really wacky things and cueing bizarre alignments and stuff, they're pretty straightforward. It's not like a reformer that you could fall off of, and I don't think that with what you're describing there could be that many problems. The biggest thing I would say is just if he's got some nerve issues going on, he's probably not very coordinated. He's not going to be able to follow your cues and stuff very well, so just have a lot of grace and just keep it really simple. And even things like I'm going to say elephant again. Like focusing on spreading all the toes and lifting them up on elephant could be like huge. And maybe toe corrector might be too hard. Again, you know better with your client, but sometimes, you know, we reach for the big guns when somebody has an issue with their toes or their neck or whatever, and they really just need some really subtle things. So that would be my only thing to caution you on is just don't go too fast, too big, and do drumming of the toes because it might frustrate him.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah,
Thank you.
Yeah, have fun with that. If you got one of the Balanced Body ones, there's two different spring settings, and I think it's the red one is lighter, if I remember correctly, but I talked about that on the show as well. So.
Okay, great. I'll go back and try to find that.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Nope, that's it. Thank you so much for taking your time tonight.
Oh, LaVon, I always enjoy talking to you. You have great questions, and I just enjoy you. So it was good getting to connect with you.
Yep, and you too.
Okay, well, send me some more questions, and we will stay in touch.
Okay, sounds great.
Okay.
Bye.
All right, bye. All right, so fun to get to talk with people live. I enjoy that. So go ahead and remember, send in those questions. I enjoy hearing them. So I'm going to go into another, this is a totally different topic, email that somebody sent me. She wrote, I hope it's okay. I'm forwarding a couple of emails I have received recently. I was not sure about the first one, but decided to reply. I checked the PMA website, and I'm the only instructor listed in Flagstaff, so I was thinking they probably got my name from there. The second email I received makes me suspicious because the payment situation they describe, which I would not agree to. Would you please give me your opinion and how you would respond? Okay, so here's the email. She got this email. It says, hello, how are you today? My name is Marta Savio, and I work and live in Italy. I am 42 years old. I have been a physical therapist since 1998. I work in homes, pools, and fitness facilities. I do a combination of functional fitness, core work, aerobics, and strength training. I have a client, Ms. Bernadette Grega, a model here in Italy. She'll be coming to USA in 3 weeks' time for a modeling job and will be residing in Arizona temporarily until the necessary arrangement for her job has been made before she leaves. She'll be needing 60-minute private Pilates classes 2 times a week for a total of 12 weeks. Ms. Grega wanted me to come with her to the U.S., but I told her I would not be able to go with her because I have a course I'll be going for a few weeks, so I promised to help her find an instructor in her area. Please tell me a little more about yourself. Would you be able to provide her private Pilates classes, and how much do you charge for a 60-minute class? Hope to hear read from you soon. Thanks, Marta. And there's address. Okay, here's the next question, or the next email. Okay, so first off, these emails are super common. Basically, they're going to start to do this whole thing about, okay, let's schedule stuff, and, oh, by the way, you know, her manager is going to send a huge check for like $4,000, $8,000, whatever dollars, payment for your services and also for XYZ, you know, her housing or something. And can you cash it and then pay the other stuff? So they're trying to run money through you, and it sounds like all no big deal. And then a lot of times it turns out that you have to pay something first, and it gets really tricky and weird. But, again, there's a couple things you want to look for. First off, it's usually international, which kind of eliminates people wanting to talk on the phone. There's usually enough English errors that it kind of sounds like it's maybe really somebody from Italy. They usually have something like statusy, like a model involved or something that makes you kind of like, ooh, I want to work with a model or an athlete or, you know, whatever it is. And then there's a big commitment. They want to pay for a lot of stuff. They want, you know, a big package, and it's like, ooh, money, you know. And a lot of times these sound very legit. It just gets into a weird place. So trust me, we've had many of them. I think Larry, you know, responded to a couple of them and saw this and, you know, whatever. But you can see through it pretty quickly that it's not going to be something that is legit, and you definitely don't ever want to be paying out anything for someone. You don't want money to run through your bank account. You know, if they can't pay normal, I would stay very far away from it. So those are my thoughts. And I just wanted to point this out, and I was so glad that somebody brought this to our attention, because this is a big possible, I don't know, there could be a lot of things going on, money filtering and laundering or whatever, and scams, and they're trying to, you know, have you give them money, and there's no Miss Bernadette Grega. So be careful as a studio owner. If something sounds too good to be true, possibly it is. You know, if you can't get them on the phone to talk about this, it's probably a problem. Those kinds of things. And to me, like, why would this girl want to do Pilates when the other lady doesn't teach Pilates? Like, hasn't been doing Pilates. Like, what is that? It's very strange. So just keep your guard up. And I know you guys are very smart and sharp, which is why this particular instructor saw through this very quickly. And I just wanted to let the rest of you know that this stuff exists and is very common. Again, she probably did get the name from the PMA because, you know, it's online. You know, you can do a search for Pilates instructors very easily, which is a good thing, and find, you know, you if you're out there. But not only can regular clients find that stuff, scams can find you too. And, you know, they're going to make money off of people. And if they throw out there, you know, a million of these things, even if two or three come back, it's worth their time, you know. So be wise. And I just want, you know, you guys to not get picked up in a scam. Okay, so let's go on to another one. This is a follow-up from the discussion about sciatica that was, again, last week, week before, something like that. She wrote, I just want to say that the last radio show was awesome as usual. Little happy face. Thank you for answering all my questions. I had a follow-up question about the sciatica. If I worked on the adductors and the client came back and said everything was the same pain-wise, would I try a second session with the adductors, just to be sure, or move on to abductors? I suppose I'm asking this because my clients are so vague. I get a lot of answers like, yeah, I think there's pain there, or just a plain, I don't know. I even do that good elementary teacher thing and introduce the concept before the exercise, like, on this exercise, I want you to tell me if you're going to feel pain down your leg. After the exercise, I ask how they feel, and I still get the answer. It's a good thing I don't have these clients every day or I'd go insane. Okay, you crack me up. All right, so I'm going to answer the question first, and then I want to talk about these vague clients. But basically, when you're doing this detective work for sciatica, SI joint issues in general that we talked about, what you're doing is you're trying to have a very strong emphasis on one side of the muscle, possible muscle imbalance, without doing the opposing muscles. So you can feel that, or they can feel that, rather. Wouldn't it be nice if we could feel it? And you don't want to do, in this case, a lot of hip flexor, a lot of hip extensor. If at all possible, don't do any abductor. You know, it's not possible not to do any. Okay, that's why the big thing I wanted to make the point last week is that I think sometimes when I say don't do any abductor, you guys take me a little too literally because, I mean, when they're standing up, they're doing some abductor, so it's not really possible not to do any. You just really don't want to do anything that's really big on that, and you want to really emphasize one thing. So with your cueing, not even necessarily just your lesson planning, you want to really focus on the one. Now, on that next follow-up lesson, if they don't really feel anything different, that's your answer. Okay, so it's definitely not the trigger thing, okay? If you want to make sure you're on the right track, and depending on how ballsy you are, you can do the abductors and feel the difference because possibly if you're on the right track, it's going to be like sticking your stick in a bee's nest, and they're going to be like, oh, my goodness, that made me just feel like hell the next day. So not to be mean or sadistic or whatever, but you're kind of looking for that. And it's not that you want to cause them pain, but when you find that, then you know that that's the area that is really out of balance, okay? So it's not that you're trying to harm them. You're trying to find the problem. So depending on your personality and your client's personality, there are those clients that if you are really suspecting it, just go with it. Don't do anything to make it worse kind of a thing. But sometimes you have clients that are a little more inquisitive and open-minded and understanding, and you can explain this to them. For example, if I was your client, I would totally want to know if we were for sure on this, and I'd be okay if you made it a little worse to know that this is exactly what we want. And once you explain it to me, I'd be like, oh, yeah, totally. Let's do abductors and see if this is for sure it. A lot of people, if they're in pain, they don't want to go anywhere near it, and those people, you don't do it. So you got my big famous answer. It depends. And I know a lot of instructors are shaking their head going, oh, my gosh, she's crazy. I would never do that. And then some of you guys are going, well, how could you not find out? So it depends. Okay, so I also want to remind you that there's not just the abductor-adductor possible imbalance. You also have hip flexor, hip extensor, internal, external hip rotators, and then you've got the posterior, anterior tilt muscles, so like abs versus low back, that you want to kind of test out. I just start usually with adductors because in my experience, those are usually the weakest link for a lot of people. So it's a good place to start that you can find out some information. Here's what I generally feel or see happen is that I do a really like kill their adductors, and the next day they're crazy sore there because those muscles were weak, right? And they say, oh my goodness, my sciatica feels like totally gone. What did you do to me? That's usually the experience I get. And if they don't have any pain, you're at least on the right track, okay? So when they say things like, I think it's better. I don't know. It's better. Because if it was really bad in the first place and you did something that was not good for it, they'd be cussing you out and saying really obscene things about you, and they'd be threatening to not come back. All right, so this is one thing that they're going to know if there's pain. Okay, sciatica is not fun. If they've been dealing with this for a long time to where they're coming in and complaining about it, they're going to know if there's pain. Okay, so that's kind of my question on there. Now, there's a lot of conditions that you want to work on that maybe aren't actively giving somebody a problem that they don't know if there's pain. There's a lot of people like you're describing that are just completely out to lunch with their body and what's going on and what things feel like. Again, that's not probably what's going to happen in this situation. If you really find the problem, yeah, they're going to tell you about it. So hopefully that gives you a little insight. One of the things that I like to do for these types of clients, because you know what, there's a lot you need to know and be able to discuss with them, and then get accurate feedback if you're going to do a good job. So first off, I explain that to them. And I do it just in the context of any old exercise, just, you know, maybe when I'm doing footwork or depending on the client, whatever exercise it is that you get a little extra free time to talk, for your value-adding statement, start telling them about why pain is good, meaning how you as the practitioner, the Pilates instructor, are using their pain and why it's so important that they tell you what is pain and when they feel pain, and that their job not only is to do what you say in terms of movement, but is to check in and feel their body. You know, you can talk to them about, we talk in the learning styles about why audio learning and listening is so important. And you know, you can talk to them about some of those things to really get them awake and get them paying attention. Usually these type of people are just like, whatever, because it's so hard for them. So give them little things that are easy for them to feel and start that way. So on almost any exercise, you could do this. So say they're sitting up. You say something like, do you feel that you're sitting on both butt cheeks evenly weighted? Okay. Yeah. Maybe they already are, but you're just like, do you feel that? You're just getting them in touch with their body. You know, say on elephant, do you feel how the weight is all in your heels? You know, can you shift it back in your heels more? So these are exercises that are not like make it or break it, if they do it wrong kind of thing, but it's just getting them to be in touch with it. So the more often you can do that and really get them to feel what's going on and ask them questions, do you feel this? Do you feel that? You know, do you feel your waistband touch completely down when you're doing the roll-up? And make them check in and answer you, like a verbal answer, not just a, you know, blank look. Then that's going to help them get more and more in touch with their body. And then when you need them to answer about pain, they know how to do that. I think I've mentioned this before in different parts of the P3 program, but I have had clients where they have different understandings of some of the semantics, the different words that we're using. So I had one lady that said the word pain for stretch, for work, and for actually pain. So I had to change my verbiage, and I had to say, what you feel, is it a stretching pain? Is it a working pain? Is it a bad pain? Is it good pain? I had to, you know, talk to her about this and really make sure that what I'm relating the word to mean is the same thing as she's relating it to mean. So be aware that the vague people tend to maybe have a different relationship to what they're feeling, and it's usually a little more vague and not as clear as in what I was describing. So they might say things, and they could say, ouch, you know, I feel pain, and they're really just feeling work, and you want that, you know, so you want to make sure they understand that some of the sensations they're feeling that maybe they're uncomfortable with, like work and stretch, it's not that they're bad. It's just that they're not used to it and they're not liking it, but it's actually good for their body. Now, I'm not talking like stretch ripping something pain. I'm talking about just people that don't like to move their body in any way outside of the one set position that they sit in all day. I think you guys probably know what I'm talking about. You've probably seen those clients or had those clients. So hopefully that makes sense. I'm going to move on to the next question. So hopefully that makes sense, and I'm sure you guys can resonate. If you guys have had clients like that and you have some follow-up questions on that or want to discuss it more, please let me know. Or even let me know if you just have clients like that and that helps, okay? Okay. Well, sorry, my computer's going a little slow. Here's another question. She writes, I received a text from my client saying she couldn't come to Pilates tomorrow. She had just been a CR physical therapist. The PT said that my client should give Pilates a rest because she's having problems with her ribs and breathing. I didn't think that Pilates would help this, question mark. As far as I've been told, my client has no, quote, conditions. She's 58 and has only been to see me a few times. Her core is weak, and she's just starting to learn how to breathe properly and learn the machines. I want to be able to respond to this client with something better than rest up. Any suggestions? Well, this kind of goes back to what we were talking about before about arguing with a PT's, you know, diagnosis and prescription, so to speak. I think probably in this situation, the easiest thing to do would be call the physical therapist, because there's a good chance the physical therapist thinks that you might be a Pilates instructor that is doing like bigger and better and five more and go, 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 and, you know, kind of more fitnessy stuff, and that you might not be doing anything with the breath. And you just always want to remember, just because they're a PT doesn't mean that they understand the true depth of Pilates and what it's about any more than, let's say, half the Pilates instructors out there. I mean, honestly, so many Pilates instructors don't even teach anything on ribs or breathing or even understand that fully themselves, not to slam people, but it's just, it's out there a lot. So that, you know, you don't want to assume what the physical therapist knows. You might want to call them up and say, hey, I just wanted you to know that I've noticed that Susie Joe, I'm just making up a name, really has a weak core, and what we're doing is we're working on that and teaching her how to breathe properly and how to really get her ribs moving and use those intercostals. Throw out some good words there. This is the time to throw out your anatomy vocabulary and, you know, discuss that with her and tell her what you want to do with her and ask her if you think that would be appropriate. You know, ask her, you know, be very honoring to her. Say, you know what, she mentioned that you think that she has some problems with her ribs and breathing, and I'd really like to work on that with you. If I did X, Y, and Z, do you think that that would be complementary to what you're doing? I you know, let her know that you are not the no pain, no gain, you know, all that kind of stuff person. You might want to offer to give her a free lesson. Let her come experience your personality and the equipment, you know, if she's interested. A lot of them don't want to bother. Sometimes that's a really great thing, though, and could lead to a lot of possible referrals. So you've got a great opportunity there. Personally, I completely agree with you. I don't think that there's any reason why that client should rest and take some time off of Pilates. There might be some other reason. Maybe the client has insinuated to her that she has to pick one. The PT wants to keep her there. Maybe the PT wants to do some exercises with her, you know, and she can bill out for that versus having her just do it with you. There might be some, you know, conflict of interest in her prescription. You keep that in mind. I'm not saying for sure, but just a thought. But definitely, somebody that has no major conditions and has a weak core and needs to work on her ribcage breathing, heck yeah, she should be doing Pilates. So I definitely wouldn't tell her to rest up. That's not going to help her. Unless she's got like a broken rib, which, quite frankly, I've worked with clients and continued on during the broken rib phase and just worked around it. You know, we didn't do extra side bending and rotation and stuff, but of course they have to breathe no matter whether they're doing Pilates or not. And that way you can work a little and keep them working out. So those are my thoughts. Hopefully that is helpful, because people need to keep moving. Okay, so we have a couple other questions, some really great ones that I'm not going to be able to get to tonight because they're a little more in-depth than I want to spend time right now. One of them is about the jump board, which I alluded to earlier, and working on correct mechanics for the gait as well as for jumping. So we're going to get into that hopefully next week, unless you bombard me with a ton of crazy important questions. Then there's another one about sciatica, apparently an important topic, and prolotherapy and cortisone and different treatments and such, and how that pertains to us and different thoughts. So I might get to those next week, and I hope you guys have a great week. And everybody remember that your job is to inspire and empower your clients because everybody deserves to enjoy movement. Have a great night, and I will talk to you later.